Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Regularly on Friday Night Clive, we have our friends from Stourbridge Rotary who come in to spend an evening with me to find out a little bit more about what they've been up to over the previous month. And it's all getting rather exciting because there's a skydive that's recently happened. And I'm joined by Roger Meredith from Stourbridge Rotary. Good evening, Roger.
Good evening, Clive.
Thank you very much for your time this evening. Now, it's you that's done the skydive, isn't it?
It is.
Are you completely mad?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, how our perception of danger and what we choose to worry about varies from one person to another. To me, jumping out of an aeroplane, a modern parachute jump, the risk is low, the statistics are there to prove it, whereas coming into a radio studio and talking on the radio and making a chump of yourself and then having to emigrate, that all sounds much, much more worrying.
Smoke and mirrors, Roger, smoke and mirrors. Why did you decide to do a skydive then? Obviously, this was a fundraising exercise for the Rotary.
I'm not entirely sure that I decided. I think it's one of those things where the club, a small group of elder members, will probably make an assessment of the younger, more feeble-minded members and obviously chose me. And then started a campaign of sort of subtle suggestions and hints, you know, so that in the end it seems as though it was my idea. I'm not entirely sure that it was.
And so you did this recently, last week?
We did this last week.
Last week. And where did you do it over?
We went to Hinton, which is in the heart of the Cotswolds, small old bomber station, as they mostly are, doing parachuting and gliding, and we were very lucky with the weather. Yes, it all worked out extremely well.
So you go up in an aircraft, and are you strapped to somebody?
Indeed you are, yes.
Goodness for that. Somebody that knows what they're
not
doing.
Maybe stupid, but not quite that stupid.
Went up there.
No, you are strapped extremely tightly, so
right.
You have a new best friend.
Right.
And they're very professional, obviously.
And how high does the aircraft go to?
So it goes to 13,000 feet,
mm-hmm.
and you drop to about 5,000 feet, which takes around about 45 seconds. Sounds quite a long time in context of a theme park ride or whatever. Everybody says it goes really quickly, and they're right, it does.
At that point, then, is that the point that the parachute cord is pulled when you get to that 5,000 feet?
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
and do you do that, or does the
no,
the
no,
expert
no, no, no. The instructor, right. The instructor does that. There is a backup. We're all relieved to know. And indeed, there's a little computerized device to set off the backup if the instructor doesn't do so. So all very, very safe. And so during the free fall itself, you. Very, very little sensation of dropping, strangely, because there's no point of reference. You're not near a building or rocks or whatever. But it's still an assault on the senses. It's loud. It's very, very windy. I was quite aware of the change in pressure, which I suppose in a normal aircraft, you come down relatively steadily, but your ears still pop. I was quite aware of my ears popping quite a lot. I was almost deaf by the time I'd landed, but great fun. Absolutely great fun.
And how much money have you raised through sponsorship for that?
Well, so far we're up to about £650. We've got £160 of gift aid to add to that, but it's rising every day. I think it's gone up a bit more today, so I don't know the latest figure.
And where will that money go towards?
So the money will go initially into the club's charitable account, and as you know, Rotary Club is quite good at finding little local charities, efficiently run charities, run by enthusiasts, and we like supporting these people. We feel we get value for money from our donations. So there are some bigger groups. Obviously, this year we've been supporting Ukrainian refugees, and we've been supporting the earthquake in Syria and Turkey. And some of the slightly larger local charities, so Black Country Food Bank and Mary Stevens Hospice and so forth, but also quite a few smaller local charities, Discover You, a charity for adults with learning difficulties, the ACE Running Club for Children in Wolliscote, a brilliant organisation. No Limits, we had a speaker from there, a community project working with adults with autism in Old Swinford. Great local charities who really deserve support and perhaps don't necessarily get it. And I feel that's one of the things that the club is good at. We know how to find charities who need support.
Mm. Now, of course, this, you know, it's all right raising the money, but you're reliant on, you know, people donating and, you know, obviously the fundraising activities that, yes, that you all get involved with. Talk to me about the kind of people that are able to make donations or support the work of Rotary.
Well, I have to say an awful lot of what we do is raised by club members themselves. I suppose as a group we're sort of that way inclined, and we tend to run what we call fellowship events, which may be get-togethers of different descriptions. It might be something as simple as a Skittles evening, or it might be something rather more sophisticated, and we'll generally raise money that way. We'll have lectures and gosh, what else has been going on recently? I ought to know.
I've never met such a more industrious team of people, really, because, you know, there's always something going on in one way or another. But I guess, are you reliant on the support of perhaps larger businesses who can perhaps, you know, offer either financial support or you know, do something else as your own activities?
Yeah, it would be lovely to say yes. I suspect the problem there is that within Stourbridge itself, we don't have really large businesses, and we sort of struggle a bit in that sense. So we do get a certain amount of help, but we don't have any sort of regular sponsorship, which I think would be excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose a lot of companies, it's quite difficult to make personal contacts. People turn over, staff turn over. Mm.
But I think the important thing to note is all the money that you raise through all of your activities stays within the Black Country, doesn't it? Pretty well.
I won't say all of it does.
You've been helping Ukraine, yes, and things like that, so I appreciate that generally.
Yes, so we do spend money internationally. The money that we spend locally is local.
Mm.
Yeah, very much so. And indeed, most of the money that we spend internationally will be through Rotary organisations. So for argument's sake, the earthquake in Syria, what we tend to do as a club is we tend to buy what are called shelter boxes or aqua boxes. These are self-explanatory, the things that are needed most urgently. And these are mostly organisations set up by Rotary or organised by Rotary who are able to respond in a specific area with precisely what's needed very, very rapidly. And it's a small contribution to the whole problem. And I think that's one of the issues with autonomous Rotary clubs. We're all quite small. Each club's contribution is limited. We have the choice of what we do with our money, but it means that we don't get the the overall picture of how much all the clubs within Rotary of in this case Britain and Northern Ireland would contribute. And if we knew that, they would be sort of headline-raising figures, but because each club does it independently, it perhaps isn't quite so obvious.
But of course, Rotary is, worldwide organisation. So you know,
absolutely,
So you know, international support comes from many different countries as well, doesn't it?
So the first thing that would happen, I mean, I wasn't particularly involved, but the first thing that would happen in the Turkish-Syrian earthquake would be contact with Rotarians and Rotary clubs in Turkey, trying to find out exactly what was needed and where. A very direct approach, perhaps.
So, of course, all this, as we've been saying, is done by, you know, everybody that's part of Stourbridge Rotary.
Yes.
But also you have a president who's who gets changed every year.
Who gets changed.
Vida will kill me for saying that.
No,
but,
I don't.
But, you know, each year a new president is elected.
It's
So that's coming up soon, isn't it?
It's an honour and it's a responsibility, but it is quite a big responsibility. Yes, and yes, it will change. I think a year is probably as much as anyone could withstand.
So who's going to be the president then for 23-24?
Our new president is Dale Wilkins, who's been with the club for some time now. He's works, indeed still does work in education, and he's chairman, I believe, of our Youth Services Committee. So I suspect that will be his sphere of interest in the coming year. And well, he will take over on the 1st of July.
I'm going to put you on the spot now. What do you think would be Dale's biggest challenge in picking up from where Vida will leave off, effectively?
Oh, gosh. I think we're very aware that membership is becoming slightly harder. As you know, we meet as a lunchtime club, and that almost entirely means that we're looking at people who are retired, and finding new members is surprisingly difficult. As members, we find that quite hard to understand because we think it's great.
You do have a lot of fun.
We have a lot of fun.
But there's a serious job involved as well.
Yes, a lot of our visitors comment on the fact that we enjoy ourselves, and we do. And I think there are other clubs, particularly worldwide, who take their role as Rotarians and as fundraisers much more seriously, perhaps, than we do. You know, to us, it's a major part of the membership and the enjoyment of the membership.
But you've got to have fun doing it, otherwise it becomes a chore and laborious, doesn't
it?
You know,
absolutely.
Now, tell me about your role within the club, because everybody has a particular area.
You don't stay in the club for long before you get a job, whether you want it or not. And as one of the slightly younger members, I was deemed suitable to be the bulletin editor. Which involves a sort of a monthly report or a monthly account of what the club's activities have been. And it's quite short, it's 2 pages, but it's enough to keep me occupied. There was an assumption, I think, that I had IT skills, which was quite erroneous. But so there's quite a steep learning curve for me there. But I just about cope with it now.
So when you're not rotarying, what's your day job?
I retired. I was an optometrist. Worked for many years in Cradley Heath down the road. And my wife and I retired about 3 or 4 years ago. And we haven't stopped since.
Like anything, if you want something doing, ask a busy person.
This is it, and this brings me back to this membership that you have to find people before they find other things to occupy themselves and persuade them to come along.
Well,
to
that
Rotary.
Takes us on to your sort of, you know, your chair of the Membership Development Committee, as we've been saying. So tell me about that.
We meet probably once every month or two, and we generally discuss people who we think might be suitable. We ask them to come along, if at all possible, to a club meeting just to get a feel for the place. Just trying to think up ways of finding new members. We're quite aware of the demographics. You know, some of us slightly older members, and they find it difficult coming along to all the meetings. So we'd really like to recruit a few more slightly younger members. We've had some success in doing that. But it's quite a task. Everybody is busy these days, as you well know.
They are. But, I mean, you also have young Rotarians, which we talked about on the previous programme. So is that not a natural development step for them?
there is a bit of a gap. We do quite well with our young Rotarians in Mullerscope Primary School, and we have Interact at Old Swinford Hospital School. And then, of course, there is that sort of gap after that. And, you know, people go off, they get jobs, they have families and one thing and another, they have commitments, and we tend to lose them then. And then we have to try and get them back as slightly older members. And that's the trick.
Yeah, I can imagine. But, you know, it's like anything. I would have thought that if you've got them to start with, yes, people's lives, as you say, become busy and they go off and do other things. But, you know, even if they can retain some ties with you, then, like anything, if you want to do something, if you diary it, it'll happen. So, you know, depending on how busy their lives get,
absolutely,
you diary it and you can still come and do a bit. The commitment may not be, the commitment will be there, but they may not be able to offer quite so much time.
And we understand that, you know, the organisation, you know, if you go back 30 years, 40 years, it was very regimented and, you know, only one person from each profession was allowed in any one club, and your attendance was monitored very, very closely. And none of that applies anymore, of course. It's a much looser organisation now. And we're quite happy for people to come along as and when they can. Some of it is about education, and I think this is where the sort of school contacts are valuable, and they may not pay off for years, but I think they will. Eventually, we can hope that people will still retain an interest as they get older.
So, I mean, your interest really was sparked by your father, because your father was in Rotary, wasn't he?
Yes.
How did you get involved? Was that through him, or how did it work?
That's quite interesting, because I suppose we moved as a family to Stourbridge in the early 60s. I would imagine my father joined quite soon after that. Obviously, as a young lad, I took very little notice, but there are various things that stand out, and I can look back now and see how important it was to him. He was the club secretary for many years, which of course is, you know, as Fred will tell you, the hardest job. And they had some very ornate meetings where they all dressed up in Edwardian costumes and things like that. I can remember all of this sort of stuff that people don't really do.
No, so you don't do that
now? No, strangely enough, no. But I can see that it meant a great deal to him. He asked me, probably when I was in my 40s, if I would join. I didn't give more than 2 seconds of thought. There was no way I could have 2 hours of time off every Wednesday lunchtime. And yet now I can look back and see how important it was, and I realise how important those sort of personal friendships and social interaction, and, you know, that's quite a big thing these days, isn't it? How important it is to maintain that as we get older. I get it.
Yes.
In a way that perhaps I didn't earlier on.
So what's the youngest age that somebody can join Rotary then?
Oh, I put me on the spot there, but I think any adult can join the club.
So people of 18 years of age and over then, is that what we're saying?
Yes, I'm pretty sure they could. I mean, the reality is that it tends to be the slightly older people. But yes, we'd love to see some younger blood coming into the club.
Where can we find out more information, Roger?
Well, the obvious thing is to look at the website, and if you type in the Rotary Club of Stourbridge, you will go automatically to our homepage, and there are contact details there, my own contact details, and general inquiries. And that's the best way to contact us.
Excellent. It's been a delight to see you again, Roger, because I saw you when I came to your lunch a few months ago. I look forward to meeting the new president when they're in their office in.
I'm sure he will be along. We have a trip to our twin club in Stourbridge, Massachusetts, booked for October, and Dale will be leading us there. Hopefully he'll be able to tell you about that.
Splendid, Roger Meredith from Stourbridge Rotary Club. Thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Live. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 7 p.m. If you love our podcast, then please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne, produced by Andy Caddick.